Welcome to V-Spot Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Fictator. My co-host is Bill Foster. V-Spot Radio is sponsored by Planet Fictator Blog Network. Get everything you need and a few things you truly do not want. Only at Planet Fictator. All right, we're on the air for week two. Neil, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, were you digging my Lord Alfred Hayes impression?
Only a little bit.
Yeah, I was trying to do a little bit fey. Now, the other day, if you'll remember, Neil, we were trying to record this intro, and I swear to God, it took me an hour to record that. That was my best take.
How many takes did it take?
It took about 30. I would get halfway through it, then I would have a big profanity come out going, fudge! But I didn't say fudge.
So many F-bombs dropped.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. I should have saved them at a wacky blooper reel for when we're super famous. Okay, Neil, last week we were having our big Metroid discussion.
Yes.
I feel like that we kind of shortchanged Metroid Fusion just because we had other stuff to cover. And I wanted to get more in-depth into that. I wanted to talk about, get a more in-depth discussion of Metroid Fusion. Why don't you start?
Okay. Metroid Fusion came out on the same day as Metroid Prime did, way back in 2001. I think it was in November. But what it was that the director felt that since it was going to be on the Game Boy Advance, it was going to be reaching a wider audience, that they might have to make it so it's a little bit more hand-holding in a sense. Mostly in the direction that they felt it needed to be a little bit more linear. So people who weren't, people would get stuck, especially in like the first game, figured, oh, let's just kind of make it like this. So they incorporated it into the story for this segment.
Neil, hold on one second. Keep going.
Okay. So the plot of the first, for the Fusion game, is that after Super Metroid and after Other M.
You gotta come watch your brother. I told you that.
Anyway, she goes back to SR388 with a science team that's studying it and basically collecting species to study. And she's there just as a bodyguard, and she gets infected by something called the X parasite. She basically falls unconscious and. Well, and they had to somehow give her the Metroid vaccine, because that's the only thing that could fight off the X-Parasite.
Okay, right.
Changes her suit, and now she's stuck on the science space station with a strange computer telling her to do things.
Okay, well, let's go from there right now. The thing about it is, when you're playing these in a row, the first thing you notice about Metroid Fusion compared to the other Metroid games, and I feel this is kind of a failing, is that it was a lot more talky. They felt the need to really spell things out here.
Well, they had the space to do it. Back in the days, like, you know, oh, you want to put text on here? How much memory do you have? Oh, not enough.
Which it felt like to me, and it's such a cliche, that they felt like they needed to make Samus give her daddy issues.
No, that's more Other M. If you think this game has questionable daddy issues...
Okay, but the thing is, though, it did build a good story. And it built a really good premise with the X-Parasite, the idea that they could take over other things. And they had a nice touch with the enemies in this game being the enemies from Metroid 2, just because the X is from SR-88.
Well, that's only for at least one section. They also call from, like, Super Metroid and, I believe, along some new ones to go with it. It kind of takes from, like, John Carpenter's The Thing, or even from the original short story, Who Goes There? How it manipulates and is able to evolve and change species it has contact with.
Right. Down the road, later on in the game, the X infects a piece of the Samus's armor, which I guess was her armor organic?
Technically, yes. I don't know how exactly it was for the Chozo, but to order to save her, they had to like surgically cut off parts of her suit.
Right,
since
so
he wasn't able to will it off.
So So the X was able to infect it, you know, so it's walking around, you know. So you got these moments, you're going in the game, and the arm will come by, and it's going wom, wom, wom. And it's like it scared the piss out of me, you know. That's a sign that it's a very well-made game, the fact that I actually got scared when it would show up.
Most people actually feel this is actually one of the scarier Metroid games. Just on the premise alone, that the fact that you have a much stronger version of you walking around that can easily kill you in like two hits.
Now, one of the failings of the game I felt like is that it didn't really live up to the big fight at the end.
Well, that's the problem is that you're kind of basing it off of Super Metroid, which has one of the best endings ever, especially for the best boss battles.
Well, also compared to Metroid 2's ending.
Does it build up to Metroid 2 ending?
Yeah, just compared to that. And the thing about it was, it had its moments now, but the problem was, I'm expecting an awesome mirror fight, like in Symphony of the Night or in Circle of the Moon had Castlevania games. But here, you're trying to fight it, you're trying to do some cool stuff, but basically, the best way to beat the SAX armor is to just jump over it. You just have to get in a very monotonous pattern. And also, they had a great cutscene. What's that?
That's some of the problem of some recent games. Some recent games generally have the final boss as somewhat of a pushover compared to earlier bosses, especially some of the bosses in this game. Should we tell them about Nightmare?
Yeah, go ahead.
They kind of keep alluding to a lot of the bosses a lot through the games, and for one section of the game, you just see this big giant shadow just flying back and forth, destroying things. And when you finally find it, it's basically this weird bioweapon that the scientists have kept as part of the Federation, and it got infected, and it's this weird floating boss that has gravitational powers, and as you shoot it, its face mask comes off and it starts kind of melting away the face.
Yeah,
it's one of the hardest bosses in the game, if not the hardest.
Later on in the game, they do a cutscene where you find an entire lab full of Metroid.
The Federation is trying to use the bioweapons? Why is the Federation always evil in this game?
Yes, I'm beginning to suspect the Federation is evil. Okay, but you got all the Metroids, and you see the SAX is shooting at them. And anyway, the compartment gets cut off, and it blows up. But the thing about it is, the computer tells you that there's 10 SAXs on the ship that they've learned how to reproduce.
Because most X's basically asexually reproduce. Almost through mitosis, and basically the SAX is able to do it. And this moment, you're basically thinking, "Ah, crap."
Now, it does have a really cool moment at the end when you're trying to get back to your ship, and you get there, the ship's not there, and suddenly an Omega Metroid pops up. You know, I was like, what?
It's trying to mimic the whole baby Metroid coming in to save you.
And then suddenly SAX comes in, and it's like going to try to kill it because it has like an uber hatred of Metroid. But you know, it's like he said in that one scene, he was like, "It's like we can create an Omega Metroid within days. Why? Why would you want to?"
As a subtle hint, as you're going through
could come from it.
As you're going through the final sections, you can actually find the little molting skins of the Metroids as it goes through the multiple stages through the SR-388 section.
Yeah.
Which has a little Turian-like section that has, the remnants of Ridley. Somehow they've just figured, let's just keep remnants of Ridley to study it. Hopefully the X-Parasite won't infect it.
Okay. Now, we'll put a pin in the Metroid thing for now, because Fusion was a very good game. And next week, we might talk about what our favorite Metroids were. Neil, do you remember that movie we watched Saturday night?
Blood Fight, yes.
Yeah, it was a Bolo Young movie, and I was looking it up, you know, because I saw this music video on YouTube, and it had these clips of these Bolo Young movies. And one of them had Bolo Young choking out a sumo wrestler with his own diaper. So, naturally, I was very intrigued, and I found out this movie called Blood Fight. Apparently, he plays the same character he did in Bloodsport a year before. I think
he
might have changed it to... Huh?
It's also known as Final Fight in some places. Not to be confused with the Capcom game Final Fight.
So, his name was Chang Li, and they try to say it like that, you know, be legally distinct Vietnamese Cobra.
Yeah.
Now I know the movie got some bad reviews in some places, but I don't really care because I feel like the movie had a lot of heart. And I feel like there's a lot of things.
There's a lot of these movies around this time, like Kickboxer, Bloodsport, even that movie Cold Case has Lou Ferrigno and Red Brown.
Yeah.
They all kind of go for the same treatment. You know, you must fight through one by one.
Well, the good thing about this movie is that it really did try to play with expectations. Like, first you see him meeting this punk American, and you think he's going to train him, but then it turns out he's still a punk, and he has to train somebody else.
Yeah.
And then later on you get to a fight, and later on he gets to the tournament, the new student does, and he gets killed by Bolo Young. Unfortunately, they spoiled this in the opening credit, in the description on the YouTube video.
Yeah.
Which kind of ruined it, but it was really cool, and the thing I liked about it is his wife left him, and she shows up later being married to a rich old man. And in the final scene, when he won the tournament, instead of having her doing the begrudging clapping, she looks like she's actually genuinely happy for him, which I thought was a good change of pace.
Well, there's no seething undertones. Like, he's clapping, you're like, I'm going to get
you
for
like
this.
Yeah, nothing like the bitter clapping.
Okay.
Not like that. Here she looks like
clapping either.
It's like she's trying to hide that she's happy. And I would also say the fight at the end of Blood Fight is actually better than the final fight in Bloodsport. What the hell was that?
Nothing. I'm just wondering, so he didn't go to that weird type of Van Damme rage fit?
No, it was more he was just kind of making the comeback. It was a really good fight. It didn't have it. Of course, it wasn't Jean-Claude Van Damme being blinded by the salt. You know, and he's going around going, no, I cannot see. Which, unfortunately, is Jean-Claude Van Damme impression for me. He's going to sound like Arnold.
Yeah. Remember when I told you how the Street Fighter movie, based on the game, was going to be more akin to this, the old actual, you know, classic late 80s tournament fighting movie?
Well, what did he say exactly, the director?
Well, what it was, the director said that, you know, he felt that was kind of played out, that he wanted to have a more political-themed movie. You know, all go home, you know, stay the course type of movie.
Yes. Well, now, what did he say he didn't want it to be like?
He didn't want it to be like, I don't know, Bloodsport, Kickboxer, you know, the formula that works. So
done.
Basically, we have Raul Julia, who's the only good part of the movie, and all these characters that are not...
It's like, it's ridiculous. You have a template for how to do... And mind you, the Mortal Kombat movie kind of sucked. It just looked better because it came out around Street Fighter. Just do
well,
a tournament.
That's how Paul W.S. Anderson is with his movies. You know, you have much of a spectacle, but not much in the way of plot or pacing or,
you didn't
know,
have a bracket.
Flow.
Like, watch Mortal Kombat. It didn't have a bracket. Goro shows up in the middle of the movie for no reason.
Well, he had to spit in Goro because people like Goro. That's the problem with Annihilation, most people felt. It's like, oh, people, we've got to throw in Cyrax, we've got to throw in Animalities, here's Smoke, here's other Smoke, here's Ermac.
And these movies should be so easy. Street Fighter should have been such an easy movie because it didn't need a huge budget. You could crank and crap out one of these a year.
Most shonen animes are able to just do it because, you know, oh, here's an easy thing to do. You know, here's a little tournament bracket, here's some new characters to show up, here, have them fight.
I mean, I'm not saying it's super easy, but I'm saying, okay, you have a tournament. You set up your main characters. You set up the villain for the final round. You set up a villain for the first round. You set up something for the semifinals. That's about all you got to do. I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying you set up your tournament. Now, after that, all you got to do is set up some cool-ass fights and do some character work.
Okay.
Okay,
Neil. It is almost time for a promo with... Yes, we have a call on hold. I'm going to play the promo, then you can then I'm going to punch him in.
Okay.
Here we go.
The wait is over. The final war between Professor Necro and the Green Llama has started. Will the Earth be merged to the Necroma Zone? What is the final fate of Captain Battle and his allies? Find out at horsepowerthemovie.blogspot.com. Don't forget, following the explosive conclusion of Cosmic Forces comes the return of Horsepower and Rise of an Old Breed. Be there! I tell you, I'm an excellent radio personality.
All right, he's punched in.
Okay, Brian.
Hey, Vic.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How's it going over there, down there, whatever?
It's doing all right. I was just wondering how I'm not a millionaire from doing radio promos already.
Well, you know, a little patience. Another week or two.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. Okay, so yesterday, we've been keeping up with the Buffy and Angel comic.
Right.
And last week we were going to talk about the Angel comic, which was pretty good, but I think after reading Buffy issue 7 yesterday, that's just going to go on the back burner for now.
Yeah, I have to agree with that.
Okay, so, you know, we saw months ago where they spoiled that she was going to lose her arm.
Right.
And I was wondering what the deal was with it.
And I wasn't expecting the answer we got.
Yeah, because
they did it a week, a month early.
Yeah.
Because the spoiler cover is next month, but...
Yeah,
and by the way, if you haven't read Buffy, turn this off.
Yeah.
At least if you're planning
to
read
it. Because in Angel, they did this subplot with these demons from season 1 that can regenerate limbs.
Right.
And I was thinking it might be something about that, but then suddenly, she's fighting the Zompires, because, well, everybody at first thought it was going to be some artsy abortion issue.
Right, because that was the last issue, was talking about getting
right.
an abortion. And so fighting the Zompires.
I have a special guest at the moment. What is it, Connor?
Okay.
Okay, Connor, let me help you pull your pants up. Here you go. Do you have to doo-doo? There you go.
You are a professional quality broadcast.
Yeah. All right, buddy.
It happens on Howard Stern a lot. You know, he's got to put a change of diaper for someone.
Well, yeah. Just with him, it has a far different tone. God, I hope it does. Okay, so anyway, she's fighting the Zompires, you know, and
right,
it's actually a very action-packed issue.
Yeah, big fight scene with, like, 20 of the Zompires. Which, by the way, as I was saying to you the other day, Zompires, hilarious.
Yeah, it's like, you know, so I'm wondering what it is, and it seems like, you know, they're going to get the better of it. Suddenly, Buffy comes in helping. Now, from years of watching pro wrestling pregnancy storylines, I'm expecting a Zompire's going to hit her in the stomach or something.
Exactly what I was going with. It's like, oh, God, they're just going to go into a miscarriage.
You know, because that's easier, because the thing about abortion is, in real life, it's kind of fact. In fiction, it's kind of a thorny area.
You don't see it addressed much in fiction.
Right.
People don't like to risk either side.
It's awkward. Even if it goes
right.
perfectly, you know, somebody still had to... It's a very ugly situation, even if it goes perfectly, no matter how you feel about it.
Right. So anyway, that's not the point, though, because the point is looks like Buffy
right.
and Spike have won. They have this deep emotional conversation about how Spike feels about Buffy, telling her he's still in love with her. Then right in the middle of that, Buffy screams. Next panel, her arm's gone.
And I noticed something. I said, wait, are those circuits?
I had pretty much the same reaction, like, that doesn't look like blood.
And then it turns out she's a robot.
Yes, and the last line of the comic, Spike, I'm a fucking robot. Censor,
yeah, and it was one of those things where Spike doesn't even look that surprised by it. You know, he's like, yeah, you're a robot.
Yeah. Now, I disagree with how you interpret that. I think he was more on a, of course, I finally tell her how I feel, and it was a robot.
Well, I was pondering what they were going to do with it, and my feeling is now, and again, I could be wrong, it's happened once this millennium. Okay, my feeling is that the issue when her and Willow were in the dreamscape, and she's decided she's going to repair the scythe to get magic back.
Right.
That I feel like that Buffy decided to go with her or something like that, because I was thinking Willow would be the only person that would know how to put a Buffy bot back together.
Right, because, I mean, Buffy bot got pretty well completely destroyed in season 6.
Right, and Willow still is involved in super science.
Right, that kind of got pushed to the back burner with her character, but she was the computer nerd way back.
Well, they don't really they're kind of iffy about the super science now.
Yeah, we haven't really had it since Warren got flayed.
You know, you haven't had, like, the super robots and things, you know, and laser guns and things like that, which, I mean, I think that's a reason, because they don't seem to mix well together.
Well, then, I've always thought, personally, that Elmoth had something to do with those evil criminal geniuses being smarter. Just one more
right.
Real advantage of living on a Hellmouth. You can be
okay.
A mad scientist there.
So my feeling is that Buffy's going to has left to have the baby and is probably going to put it up for adoption. And that she told Spike about it, you know, just so somebody, so nobody would catch on to the fact it was a robot.
And they failed miserably in their first big fight.
Yeah, which is what happened actually. Which if I remember correctly, that's what happened last time they tried to have a robot replace her.
Is this more like a Blade Runner replicant or a Doombot from Marvel Comics?
More of a Doombot.
Yeah, although she didn't know she was a robot. That was an important point, was that she didn't know it.
Well,
we
Doombots don't necessarily know they're robots until they're in the presence of the true Doom.
This is true.
Okay, I'm punching in the next caller. Here we go.
Okay.
All right, I'll talk to you guys later, then.
All right, Brian.
All right.
I'll hit you later. You can stay online if you want to.
No, I got some stuff I need to get done, so.
All right, man,
later.
It was great having you. I'll see you. Come back next week.
Hope I can.
All
okay,
right.
Bye.
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 Eric.
Hey, Victor.
How you doing?
Okay, so, talking about All in the Family.
Yeah, last week you put up a link to an All in the Family episode.
Yeah,
it was this one.
Yes, it was one unique episode where someone puts a swastika in Archie Bunker's door, and it somehow leads to a member of a JDL-like organization being blown up in his car in the street outside his house, and then the show descends. Not your typical sitcom. Go
well,
see that in Two Broke Girls.
It's a very crazy episode. I remember when I saw it on, like, TV Land. It might have been Nick at Night. You know, and I remember at the time wondering, what the hell is this? This is what All of the Family should be.
What season was this?
This is actually season 3, so All of the Family kind of got off the rails very early.
That early? This isn't close where he started getting his own little shop. What was it? What was the series?
Well,
This was before
the thing with Archie Bunker's Place is that Archie Bunker's Place got it more back to being more of a sitcom. But I was comparing it to Happy Days, because I think Happy Days followed a similar trajectory, and they were also both along. I think these were probably the two most important shows from the 1970s.
Yes, well, Happy Days didn't exactly have a spinoff, but it kind of sort of did. Happy Days didn't have a spinoff after the show ended, but I guess you call the last 4 or 5 years of the show a spinoff.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Ron Howard
left. And Mork and Mindy.
Yes.
How many spinoffs did both shows have?
A lot. I think
yeah,
they both accounted for the entire ABC and CBS schedule.
The Archie's Place, the Jeffersons, and for
Jeffersons, Maud, Good
yeah.
Times.
That was a period where everyone loved spinoffs, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, Gary Marshall was always trying to get a spinoff. But the thing with Happy Days is, you know, Happy Days started off as a 1950s sitcom about a kid growing up, and it eventually became Fonzie's Magic Show.
Kind of like how Family Guy became a nice tale about a nice little family in Chicago and then became the Urkel Science Hour.
Yeah, which I was fine with. You know, I love the Urkel Science Hour. I love Fonzie's Magic Show. But the thing is, Happy Days kind of got degraded for this. You know, they get shit for it from critics. You know, because they get it far away from it. But to me, I feel like All in the Family went just as far away from its premise. But All in the Family gets praised for it because, you know, JDL blowing up cars is serious business. Edith Bunker getting raped is serious business. So, you know, that must be good.
Yeah,
which,
well,
you know,
like
a Bunker rape episode, or attempted rape episode, actually.
I saw that one. I saw the Edith Bunker rape episode one time. I have no interest in ever, like, I had nightmares for weeks.
Well, it's not as bad as the Too Close for Comfort rate episode.
Yeah.
Actually,
as recently discussed on the internet.
Victor, what was that show you said you were watching?
I didn't want to get into this, but, you know, I've been watching, I was watching Felicity when I had the flu. This went on the sideline once I got Saved by the Bell rerun.
Yes.
But anyway, by episode 7, God, I don't want to show on this, but they did a rape episode 7 episodes in. And I kind of feel like, you know, Felicity, I'm not ready at this point in our relationship to do a rape episode. I mean, I understand you want to take my viewership to the next level, and I appreciate that, but I'm not ready yet, and I don't appreciate you trying to force me.
Are they trying to one-up how 91210 was with its rape and molestations and everything?
They were trying to do a public... Not really. They were just trying to do an after-school special, but it kind of fell
That's
apart
early.
In a lot of ways. It fell apart in a lot of ways that I can't get into in about 5 minutes. Eric, are you aware that Saved by the Bell is on Netflix now?
Yeah, I just heard about it.
Oh,
have you been
speaking
watching
of attempted
it?
Rape, tell them about that New Class episode.
They did this New Class episode in about season 4, you know, because New Class had to do a public service episode every few times because of some FCC rules. So they did a date rape episode, and what I found hilarious about it was they did a comedic subplot with Screech being harassed by the lunch lady at the college. So they did a comedy date rape episode and an episode with a serious date rape episode.
The only thing I wonder about the show is,
on...
yes. How come after like a couple of seasons in, Screech started talking with his weird voice, this new weird voice
he had? Oh yeah,
that
was at that point.
I was like, I wasn't watching it regularly, but one time I put it on and I'm like, why is Screech talking like this?
Did you ever read his book?
No, but I heard about it.
Okay, I read it, and he talked about New Class a lot in it, which I'll probably be the only person that read this book for New Class, but he said the reason he started talking in that voice was he was trying to distance himself from Screech, so he was trying to make his other he was trying to make Screech as cartoonish as possible.
That's not a good plan.
Yeah, it wasn't a good plan, you know, but he told this great story about him and Dennis Haskins, how they said they were always trying to do gay innuendos, the writers were, between Belding and Screech. And Dennis Haskins finally told the writers, he said, that's it, Mr. Belding and Screech are not going to fucking hug. And the way Dustin Diamond said it was, Dennis Haskins does not talk to people like this.
Except
that's
on
how
that
set
Always
up
Sunny
was.
Episode.
Huh?
Except for on that Always Sunny episode, where you played a coach where they were trying to frame for being molesting kids.
Yeah.
So at the end, when he's trying to be nice, getting Mac out of the door, he's kind of like, nice to see you. Bye. The little fucker's going to hell.
No, he said prick.
Oh.
Yeah, he said, I little prick.
Mr. Belding, language.
But yeah, this is interesting, you know, and maybe we can get into it further next week, you know, because... I wish All in the Family was easier to access right now, because it's not really on TV at the moment. I don't know, it might have to be on, I wish it would be on Netflix. Like, if they put Happy Days and All in the Family on Netflix, I'd probably be completely content.
Well, they already got Power Rangers and both Saved by the Bell. Is it all Saved by the Bell?
No, they don't have College Years yet.
But they have a New Class?
Still.
I think it's on Antenna TV over here, All in the Family. I don't know if you have that.
Oh.
Okay.
Hey, hello to my car, old man.
That's our cue to start wrapping it up.
Okay, Eric, I'm sorry you didn't have more time to talk this week.
That's
30
okay.
minutes seems to fly by.
Yes. All right, see ya.
All right, will you come back next week?
Sure.
Okay. All right, Neil, I think things went well the second show. We had a special guest again.
We always have special guests.
I'd like to thank Brian Fowler and Eric Posen. Please be sure to go to keep reading Cosmic Forces. It's at horsepowerthemovie.blogspot.com. And after that, Horsepower will be coming back. And, Neil, is there anything else you'd like to plug?
Not much, other than the fact that I believe that Xenoblade's going to be coming out pretty soon at the beginning of April. And for most people who want a JRPG, we tried to fight to get this game, so hopefully try to get it pre-ordered, because I think that's the only way you can get it, through GameStop or through Nintendo.com. And we're about done right here. We got about 5 seconds.
All right, Dale, play the sound one more time.
All right.
Get the hell out of my car, old man!
And we are done. Goodbye, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye.